Hello, welcome to another edition of The Debate. I'm Kavit Akhvai. Iran's 11th presidential elections. Polls to open on June 14 for Iranians to elect their 11th president since the establishment of the Islamic Republic in 1979. So far in the democratic election process, the Guardian Council has approved 8 hopefuls. In this debate, we'll discuss the candidates, Iran's election process, especially compared to other countries, and ultimately, why Iran's presidential election matters at the world stage.
With the list of final candidates now out, Iran is preparing to hold its 11th presidential election in mid-June. The list of candidates include veteran figures from various camps. The reformist camp consists of former nuclear negotiator Hassan Rouhani, former Vice President Mohammad Reza Arif, and Mohammad Karazi, a former minister of various portfolios. Secretary of the State Expediency Council, Mohsen Rezaei, represents the independent camp. And the principalists have 4 key figures in the race: Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Saeed Jalili, Tehran Mayor Mohammad Bagher Ghalibaf, former Foreign Minister Ali Akbar Velayati, and Member of Parliament Ghulam Ali Haddad Adel. The Guardian Council approved these candidates after extensive scrutiny. According to Iranian law, any citizen has the right to bid for the presidency. But the Guardian Council, which comprises a group of religious authorities and jurists, checks the qualifications of the hopefuls to approve the most qualified for the vote. Article 115 of Iran's constitution says the president must be elected from among religious and political personalities. He must have certain qualifications, including administrative capacity, piety, a good past record, and a strong belief in the principles of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Iran's electoral process is based on the constitution, in terms of which the people elect the president directly. However, many electoral processes in the West have been criticized because the head of the state is not elected by direct vote. For example, the US president cannot be elected by popular vote alone. He or she must also be approved by a group of electors known as the Electoral College. This led to a controversy in 2000 when Vice President Al Gore, who had more national votes, lost to George W. Bush because he was favored by the Electoral College. Elsewhere, in certain European countries, the head of the state is elected by vote of parliament rather than by popular vote. After releasing the list of final candidates, campaigning for the Iranian presidency has begun. However, the chances are that some of the candidates will withdraw in favor of another candidate. This is particularly likely because the camps will try to prevent a split vote by uniting behind the candidate with the highest chance of winning the race. The identity of the lineup for the June vote is therefore expected to change.
Joining us in this edition of The Debate, Professor at the University of Tehran, Mohammad Marandi, joins us in the studio. Mohammad Marandi, welcome. First, I'd like to start off by the criticism that has been leveled against Iran by some Western media outlets and politicians, criticizing the democratic voting process. And in particular, we can look at what the U.S. has said, a couple of the officials there, criticizing Iran's vetting body, the Guardian Council. Are they even in a position to criticize Iran's democratic election process?
Well, in my opinion, no. First of all, the democratic process in the United States is deeply flawed. There's no democracy of information. For example, in the recent presidential elections, we saw that Ron Paul, who was the most progressive candidate in the eyes of many, was ignored by the media and relentlessly ridiculed. In the United States, alternative voices like people like Chomsky have no voice in the mainstream media. So when there's no democracy of information, there's no democracy. And then, of course, the same is true with the EU. If you look at southern European countries, I doubt they feel that the system is very democratic. In Greece, Spain, in Italy, the way in which Brussels has dictated terms upon them, and as well as what happened more recently with the banking sector and so on, and how they've imposed themselves. So, and then in addition to that, you have the fact that the closest U.S. and European allies in the region is the apartheid state Israel. When Palestinians vote for Hamas, they come under siege with the support of the West. And of course, key U.S. allies in the region like Saudi Arabia and Qatar not only do not have democracies or elections, they don't even have a constitution. They spread extremism both at the religious level as well as terrorists, as we're now seeing in North Africa and in Syria. So I don't think really Western countries have much to say.
Very well. Let's introduce our other guests for this edition of the debate. We have Frederick Peterson joining us from Washington. He's a senior fellow at the Congressional Defense Policy Advisor. Frederick Peterson, welcome. My same question is going to go to you as I asked Professor Morandi, and that is the criticism that has been leveled against Iran's democratic election process. You're from the U.S. The U.S. has come out, for example, Under Secretary for Political Affairs Wendy Sherman, saying that the Guardian Council and the vetting process is not free and fair. Is the U.S. in a position to do that when we're looking at how the popular vote doesn't actually come out to elect the president?
Well, we're switching from one question to another. One is the legitimacy of the process in Iran, and then we're switching to the legitimacy of the process in the United States. Which would you like me to address first?
I'm comparing it, and I'm wondering why the U.S. would come out and level a criticism against Iran's Guardian Council in one case and the vetting process.
Okay. A vetting process, let's look at the definition of the word democracy. Either it has meaning or it does not. The meaning, within itself, if it does not have meaning, we cannot pretend that it has any substance. A form and a substance are two entirely different things. A democratic form cannot simply go under the aegis of a name and have the substance of that name unless there is a practical result. To have a council decide who the candidates may be, which is in direct violation of about 19 years of Iranian law itself. It was Iran that decided in the Interparliamentary Council, I believe, how democracy is to be defined there. And under that original declaration, now 19 years old, any citizen would be allowed to run, not approved citizens. Any party may be allowed to form, not approved parties. Any general rights and human free expression were to be freely allowed. None of the three of these is allowed under the current system. Under the United States system, if we look at the United States system is very clear. We do not have and never had and never purported to have a direct election for the president. Our direct election is for delegates to vote by the power of the state so that the states may be balanced, so that those states with vast, large populations may not make irrelevant the smaller states. In a sense, it's an extension of democracy, not a restriction of it. We vote for electors in the United States. Those electors meet in an electoral college and reflect the will of those who put them there. So it's really not relevant to attempt to compare the two. There is no restriction on who may run at the national level in the United States, and no restriction of the result. So does that answer your question, or shall we go into this a little more deeply?
Somewhat. I'm going to address Professor Morandi on this, and in particular, Professor Morandi, of course, your thoughts, but Article 115 in the Constitution does have prerequisites for the candidates. But we had our guest Frederick Peterson talk about the process in Iran not being democratic, I believe was the words that you used there, Frederick Peterson. Marandi, go ahead.
Well, again, he mistakes the law in Iran, and I think when he speaks about the Inter-Parliamentary Council, he's speaking about local elections, which we have in the next 3 weeks, and that law is effective, and the candidates are vetted by parliamentarians. But with regards to the Guardian Council, it is in the Constitution. The Constitution was voted for by the public and approved, and the Guardian Council and its role, it's a very complex system of checks and balances in Iran. The leader himself is under supervision of the Khobragan Council. He can be removed at any time. There's a very complicated process there, and the president has to have certain qualifications. I'll just leave it at this, that the fact that the turnout in Iranian elections is significantly higher than that of the United States, both parliamentary, local, as well as presidential elections, shows that, in fact, the candidates in Iran are more diverse, and the choice that people make is of greater significance to them. Otherwise, they wouldn't be so motivated to participate. The sheer differences, for example, between Mr. Ahmadinejad and Mr. Rezai and Mr. Mousavi 4 years ago, or 8 years, between Mr. Ghalibaf, Mr. Ahmadinejad, and Mr. Hashimi Rafsanjani and Mr. Larijani were so great that they led to such an extraordinarily high turnout in both cases. So I think that's really beyond the point. And the United States, regardless of the fact that it is not very democratic, and as I said, critics of the political order really have no voice in the country. You would never see the greatest intellectual of the United States is probably Noam Chomsky. You would never see him, an article of his in the New York Times, or you wouldn't see him on CNN or Fox News. But beyond that, the point that I really want to get to is that the United States doesn't criticize Israel for being an apartheid regime. It doesn't criticize Saudi Arabia, Qatar, the United Arab Emirates, you know, Jordan, and other dictatorships, Morocco. So I don't see any reason, and it hasn't, with regards to Egypt or Tunisia, before the revolution, they actually supported these dictators till almost the very end. So there's no reason to think that the United States really cares at all about the will of the Iranian people.
Well, let's try to get an idea about the relationship between Iran and the United States under new President Frederick Peterson. I mean, by virtue of resources and, of course, the strategic location that the Islamic Republic has, under any circumstances, no matter how you look at it, it poses particular importance to the United States. Why is it that the U.S. always says, we have to wait and see if there's going to be changes coming from Iran? Why is the focus on Iran from the U.S.? Shouldn't it be the other way around, or better yet, reciprocated, as the U.S. president initially started his term did, and of course with the Nowruz messages, etc.?
Well, if we both were truly reaching for a middle ground and for a compromise, I think that is an ideal that simply does not exist. I think there is a rather rigid, I don't really see how that could be denied in the selection of candidates and the process where thousands and thousands of students were in the streets after the last election and rather harshly dealt with. I don't think that's to be denied in the eyes of the world. And they were objecting to the lack of representation and the lack of authenticity of the process in Iran. We wish that this were different because the stakes are indeed so high. Into the mix has come the nuclear question right now, and statements that have come out of leaders and out of some religious leadership has been profoundly disturbing, not just within the region, but to the world as well. Various leaders in Iran, those running now for high office, in fact, have been implicated and indicted in terrorist events in other countries, in other hemispheres around the world. This is a matter of rather major concern as well. So I think what we're looking for the word democracy to have meaning. It doesn't mean clam chowder. It has a substantive meaning, and that meaning must be met in order for the word to apply. And it cannot be met when the word may be trumped by religious councils or by keepers, in quotes, of a value to protect the people from themselves, in quotes, where they somehow give the will of the people a trump card at a higher level above the will of the people. This is not democracy at all.
It
is a sham.
Let me come in on that. Professor Morandi, I get a sense when Frederick Peterson was talking there of the words that Iran has stated time and again. I don't want this to be about Iran and the U.S., but the word mutual respect comes in. Frederick Peterson, the impression I got, was not speaking on the same level that exudes this mutual respect when he talks about keepers, etc. Your reaction to some of the statements there by Frederick Peterson, in particular when he also talked about how some Iranian leaders have been indicted on terrorism-related charges, which was not even part of the question that I asked. I don't know how that came into the picture.
Well, a number of things. I mean, the United States really has no respect for human rights. It's a country that's helped Saddam Hussein use chemical weapons against his own people, as well as, at that time, EEC countries, EU countries now, killing many thousands of people in this region. Right now, the United States is imposing sanctions to make ordinary Iranians suffer, even preventing, effectively, the import of medicine in the country. People have died as a result. You know, drone attacks, and we can go on about American immoral behavior across the board. So respect is really not something that comes from Washington or the U.S. president. But with regards to indictments, if he's referring to the attack in Argentina and Mr. Rafsanjani and others being accused, in fact, just recently, the Iranians and the Argentinian government came to an agreement to have a joint team go through this case thoroughly, because the Iranians know that there's no evidence. In fact, the first judge who was involved was a film of him bribing a witness to speak out against Iran, and the case was deeply flawed. And this agreement between Iran and Argentina made the United States and Israel very angry, for obvious reasons, because they don't want a real investigation into what happened. So, if there's no comparison between American drone attacks, American cyber attacks, the assassination of Iranian scientists, the use of chemical weapons supporting Saddam Hussein, a monster in Baghdad, against the Iranian people and against his own people, and Iranian behavior at the international level. And there have been no disturbing statements from any of the candidates or the leaders about anything linked to the nuclear program. It's always been said that it's a peaceful program. But again, I would like to stress the point that when he raised the issue of the previous presidential elections, the turnout in those elections were 85%. That is something beyond the wildest dreams of American political leaders, something that we would never witness in the United States, and that is because the elections were meaningful. True, there were riots. The suppression of protesters, the Occupy Wall Street protesters weren't very nice, and the killing of six or seven people during the London riots or the riots in England don't make the British regime legitimate or illegitimate. And the same is true with the United States. When during the riots in Los Angeles 50-some people were killed, that doesn't necessarily make the American regime legitimate or illegitimate. But the point is that elections in Iran are meaningful. And in the United States, the fact that the turnout is so much lower shows that for many people in the United States, it doesn't have a great deal of meaning. But the final point that I'd like to raise here is that, I'm repeating myself, the United States supports the most undemocratic and racist regimes in this region, and the fact that it does this shows that it, under no circumstances does it care for the rights of the people of Bahrain, of Saudi Arabia, of Yemen, and Jordan. And the United States, ironically, is funding the same, through Saudi Arabia and Qatar, the same terrorists and the same Al-Qaeda-like people that they, in their, because of them, they began this whole war on terrorism. Because of Al-Qaeda, they invaded Iraq and Afghanistan and caused misery for millions of people in this mm-hmm. region, killing endless numbers of people. And then now, with the Turkish regime and the Saudis and the Qataris, they are promoting extremism in Syria, where you have these monstrous extremists eating hearts and doing the most extraordinary things. These are as a result of American policy in this mm-hmm. region. So the United States really has no leg to stand on.
Right. I'd like to talk about some of the hopefuls here. But before that, let's take a listen to one of the viewer comments. There were so many of them, as posted on our Facebook page.
The West will try everything to destabilize Iran. People of Iran should be united and vote for the right candidate.
That was one viewer comment there. Frederick Peterson, since we're quickly running out of time, Iran's civilian nuclear program, that is probably one of the major focuses of the foreign policy. I don't know how deep or how closely you've been following the hopefuls here, but we have different statements coming out. And, of course, according to some even Western media, Dr. Saeed Jalili, who's a lead nuclear negotiator, is being viewed as one of the front runners. How do you see him, if he was to be elected, affect the resolve, hopefully, of Iran's nuclear civilian program?
Well, I think you've put your finger on it. If there was one issue on which the focus of the world rests, and that would be the intention and progress toward developing a nuclear weapon, thereby destabilizing a region of the world which is destable ab initio, right? And it has been for some time. But the introduction of a nuclear weapon by Iran, coupled with some of the rather extreme statements that have come from leaders in that regime, of a religious nature, confronting other states within that region with the potential of an existential threat, I think does put your finger on it. And any candidate, I would say the candidate who would be the most moderate would be the candidate that would be best serving the interests of Iran, best serving the interests of the region, and best serving the interests of peace in general. And that candidate, whomever they Right. Would be the candidate most likely to be the candidate of peace and the candidate of prosperity for Iran.
Very well. I got to jump in and get Mohammad Marandi's, in conclusion, Mohammad Marandi, your statements.
Yes, I think that these disturbing remarks that he's alluding to is the remarks that many politicians in Iran saying, that is that Israel as an apartheid regime should cease to exist, just like apartheid South Africa should cease to exist. The United States is deeply racist when it comes to the Palestinian people, and it's utterly disturbing. But with regards to the nuclear program, obviously the international community supports Iran because, as we know, the non-aligned movement, which constitutes three-fifths of the countries of the world, supports Iran's program. It has always supported Iran's program, and it will continue to support Iran's program. And even countries like Russia and China have moved away from the position
right.
of
I'm
Western
sorry,
countries.
I got to jump in here. Unfortunately, we're fresh out of time. Thank you so much. Let me thank our guest from the University of Tehran, Mohammad Marandi, in the studios with his comments, and senior fellow Congressional Defense Policy Advisor. We had Frederick Peterson with us talking to us from Washington. Thank you for watching another edition of The Debate from Mika Vitafoy and the entire team in the capital, Tehran. It's goodbye.